Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Tyler, welcome back. Second half. Marked these as the B podcast. So I don't know if that helps anybody, but it helps me. So, and it looks like you haven't moved. So that's wonderful. I love
that. I'm still in my dungeon down here. This is my music room, like the basement, my little man cave.
Nice.
You can't see it, but I've got my electronic drum set here and all my guitars and basses and all that stuff.
Great. That's cool. Yeah, I play bass. I talk to a lot of authors that also play music. It seems to be a thing.
Yeah, it is. I think it's all the artistic stuff.
You've been doing this for 8.5 years. What have you learned that you're doing different now than you did clear back when you started?
Yeah, I think maybe as we said in part A there, just like, you know, on general terms, I guess I've maybe grown thicker skin for things, you know, as far as like feedback and reviews and stuff like that. And I think you're always learning, like you're learning about your process. You know, ideally you're reading. I make reading a part of my day if I can. So I'm always reading and learning new words and new ways to plot things and all that stuff. So, I mean, I guess I've learned that I'm always going to make mistakes, but ideally and hopefully I'm getting better at my craft, but who knows? Like, that's not really for me to decide, I guess, but that's the goal, right? So it's to try to get better and you fall and you get back up, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, I've heard many times, the successful people are just the ones that kept writing, that wrote that next book and got them out. Not just the one. I haven't been doing this forever, but I've already talked to enough authors that they get a book out and they're like, yeah, it didn't really do anything. So I stopped doing it. You know, I knew a guy that spent 4 years writing, without working. His wife supported him, with kids, and, you know, it's going to be the best book ever. And then he basically said, well, I don't want to use an editor because I don't think they'll understand what I'm trying to do. And it's like, man,
gotcha.
And, you know, I think he sold 20 copies or something like that total. So, just keep going, keep writing, do more, learn. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess to your point, like I've had a couple different editors over the last batch of years and each one will kind of, you know, teach you so much because they're all, you know, they all have their unique skill sets. And so I guess I'm always looking for somebody to beat me up a little more. As I said, so I've got an editor now that's really beating me up. And I like it when I see like a whole bunch of red on the Word document and comments and track changes, I say, this is great. This is stuff I can learn because I always say, I've used a tech editor in the past too, like a military guy. And I always say, I'd rather you beat me up than the reviewers beat me up. So let me have it and let me try to get better, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's why I don't push my stuff a lot on family because they don't want to say anything and hurt your feelings. And I'm like, but you're missing the point. I'd rather you tell me this sucks than have it get out there and don't sell anything. And then I feel like discouraged. And, you know, that's a hard thing though. Family, I don't think understands very often.
Yeah. It's kind of a small crossover. Family doesn't always, you know, I've had a couple family members who'll read things, but they're not always big readers. So it's kind of a different set of people, right. You know?
Yeah, agreed. So when you're writing, what are some of the services and software that you use that are big and important to you for your writing?
I mostly use Word for drafting. I have used Scrivener in the past, and I used to use Scrivener more so for formatting, I guess. And then now I have Vellum. I use Vellum for formatting. So I guess the simple answer is Word. But as far as what we're probably going to talk about, like plotting and pantsing, I use Trello, the Trello site for, it's almost like the little note cards, you know, in the website to kind of figure things out for plotting. So I use that right now too.
Got it. Okay. Well, since we're going to get into that, maybe in a minute we could talk a little bit more about Trello for people that would like to know. But what do you do? Pantsing versus plotting. I'm assuming you started off more of a pantser and now you're more of a plotter. So tell us about your thinking on those two.
I did a podcast a little while ago with it was a serial fiction podcast. It was a really cool podcast to check out. But yeah, Christine on there mentioned the word plantser. So I guess the short answer is that's kind of where I am now, but you exactly nailed it, where I started off just totally pantsing, you know, in the beginning, which kind of worked, you know, in a way. And then I think what kind of tipped me over towards plotting a little more was I did a collaborative series with another post-apoc author called The Last Survivors. And we started off pantsing because that's kind of what we both did. So we would just have like story meetings, whatever, figure out plot a little bit, but then we would just kind of go off and pants. And then we were sort of running into some problems, like a couple, you know, some more timeline issues or, yeah, just different things that weren't lining up. It was creating a lot of work on the back end to like, you know, smooth things out. So over the course of that series, we started pantsing. And then I think about midway through, we were almost exclusively plotters for the series. And we used this Trello app to pretty much, you know, we'd have story meetings. And like I said, that series was kind of like a Game of Thrones meets Walking Dead, 300 years after the apocalypse with like weird zombie-ish creatures that were made from the cordyceps fungus. Kind of like, I guess kind of like that video game, The Last of Us, but I didn't know about that game at the time. Yeah, so we started, there was a lot of story threads, you know, for like different characters, you know, like it alternated POVs a lot. So we really needed to keep our stuff, you know, on track. So we'd have story meetings and then we would just use these note cards in this app to kind of go down and plot by scene or by ideas for each character. So we'd have everything lined up. Although at one point I hadn't met him in person. His name is Bobby Adair. I hadn't met him in person for the writing of the first, I think, three books. We had just met, you know, online. We were both indie authors or whatever. We were in each other's also bots and we were in like a multi-author box set that actually Jay Thorne put together. That's how we met. Started talking about audiobooks and stuff, and then we, you know, through email, and then we just kind of ended up collaborating. But yeah, I flew out to meet him before we did the fourth book, and at one point we plotted everything on sticky notes on his dining room table, and I'd say within a couple hours we plotted an entire book with sticky notes once. So I guess, like I said, I sort of migrated from pantsing to plotting. And then now kind of where I'm at is for my own stuff is more of a mixture where I'll have the end in mind, you know, I have a beginning, so I'll know what I'm driving towards. And then I'll almost kind of pants along a little bit with like mile markers that I know I want to hit. And then I'll hit a point in the project, which I just hit yesterday, with the current book that I'm doing, where like, maybe I'm like halfway through the book. Right. And I've kind of plotted it, kind of pantsed it. And then I just knew, all right, I know where the end is. I'm just going to plot to the end. And so I had a couple sentences for like each scene, approximate word count. And I went through and yesterday in about an hour, I just plotted the whole rest of the book. So
nice.
I was just going to say, yeah, it's just weird the way, you know, it does seem like, I guess I'm sort of the flexible mindset where like I read a blog by Chuck Wendig. Have you heard of him? It's called Terrible Minds, but he's talked about, you know, I think he's had a blog post where he says, I want there to be a process, like a concrete process, but it just doesn't work out that way, like in reality. So every book kind of becomes its own, like its own animal, you know, like maybe what works for one book doesn't necessarily work for the other. So I'm kind of flexible as far as the process per project, but it seems like I've settled into that groove of pantsing basically, right? So kind of pantsing, but also kind of plotting. And then, like I said, when I can see that home stretch, I can plot right to the end, and that's a big help. Then it's like smooth sailing from there. So I don't know. It's right. Kind of the method I've been using lately.
So you started off pantsing and you moved a little bit into plotting. Did you find that you were hitting a wall or you couldn't think of where to go, what to do at times, and that kind of pushed you into it? Or was there a specific anything that happened that pushed you into plotting more?
Yeah. So, like I said, it was definitely the collaboration, just kind of making everything, you know,
clearer,
cohesive. Yeah. Because I remember there was a couple issues that were coming up, especially in the first book, where I think what Bobby said at one point, he says, you know, Piperbrook over here is envisioning everything taking place in this book in 4 days, and I'm thinking it's over the span of a few weeks. that was like one example. And so like I tend to write very real time for some reason. I don't know why. So like I have like kind of a tight timeline with a lot of my books, and then occasionally I'll be like, you know, a week passed and then whatever. But for some reason, I just, maybe because I like a lot of like the action, immediate stuff happening and really following along. But in this book, you know, we had some different ideas that just never came up. So when we started showing each other the chapters in Dropbox or whatever, we're like, whoa, there's some issues here that we didn't really account for or know we're going to prop up, you know? Yeah, that kind of necessitated plotting, I think, just in that instance. It was us collaborating and just getting the story straight, because it was a big story that we were telling. Like I said, it ended up being a 6-book series. So we just needed to get that right. So that's kind of what tipped me over towards plotting.
Got it. And I think I was kind of the same way. The first book I wrote hit a lot of, not sure what to do. Oh, I'll just do this, and got done with it. And of course, my gosh, this is so good. And gave it to an editor and came back with like 20 pages worth of notes from her. And I went, yeah, this sucks. And I ended up ripping out literally half of it, 'cause I'm like, this just sucks. But that's when I started discovering, well, hold on, more of the plotting. But what I've tried to tell other newer than me authors is just write the book and start writing whatever feels best and most comfortable. And until you get something written, nothing else makes sense. So trying to explain to somebody how to plot and the story beats and stuff makes no sense until they've written some things. So, you know, that's my advice. Just start writing. Don't worry about, because you can change it, you can fix it, and more than likely you're going to get rid of it and move on to something else anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's a hard
thing
to hear, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's been times, you know, pantsing, a lot of people will say, you know, you tend to waste more words, like you'll have a lot left on the cutting room floor by the end. And I you know, right, that's definitely right. Happened. But then there's also been times where I will plot stuff out and you start to go down that road. And then you realize, I almost think of it like a choose your own adventure, right? It's like there's so many possibilities for a story, and right. A lot of them will work, you know, like who's to say what the best one is. But I think I found over whatever the last batch of years is, like, you know, it's hard to, I'll see that there are, like, I used to just pants things and not think about it, like, oh, this is what happened next and that's it and it's cool and it works and that's it. But as you get kind of further along, you're like, well, some choices are probably better than others, or more, there's more conflict to them, or they just work better and make for a better read. So I think knowing that can sometimes slow me down, like, you know, versus like some, I don't know, I read this on that guy Russell Blake, another author there, he had a blog, and you're just saying the further into my career I get, the longer a book takes to write. And you're like, well, that seems like counterintuitive, but it's because, you know, I've written X number of books and I've seen, like, you know, certain choices are better than others. So I want to craft a better book. Like, I want to take a little more time and like think about the plot or think about things and try to go reach for whatever the best choice is. So sometimes that can kind of like take a little longer, you know, or like I said, I've plotted things too and gone down the choose your own adventure. And then realize, wait a minute, this isn't working. Like, it's just, and then I'll have a revelation. Oh, so then I have to like, all right, I got to throw away 5,000 words, back up to where it worked, and then veer off and go on to where it should. Right. So I've had that happen even with plotting too. So it's tough to know, you know, what the best, but yeah, I think to your point, just writing the book and getting the words down. 'Cause without that, you don't have anything, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. At the beginning, you literally don't know what you don't know. And there's so many things you think, oh, I've read forever, I could write, and boom. But then as the more I've learned about writing, the more I've learned about grammar and craft and story beats and all that, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that. I didn't know that. Or, oh, I remember hearing about that before, but it didn't make sense for me. I thought it was stupid. But it's because I didn't have enough experience, and that's really it. And then you run into the problems like, well, I'll just go back and rewrite this for the 400th time. At some point, you got to stop.
Yeah, that's a good point too. It's tough. Like my first series, you know, my first couple of series, I'll look back at some of that every once in a while, and I'll cringe and say, "Ooh, what did I do there?" But then it's weird because sometimes you just kind of just going for it, like. I feel like I had, maybe there were fewer barriers to me just charging ahead back then, strangely, because I was just like doing the thing and I wasn't thinking about the thing. And then there was a product at the end. And then, you know, there were people that really liked like that stuff to this day. Like, oh, that's great. And I'm thinking, oh God, it's horrible. But it's just, it's hard to know. But yeah, in a way, I tend to think about stuff a little more, you know, now, for better or for worse.
Right.
Hopefully for better.
We'll say it's better. You're on my podcast, so we're going to say it's better. Definitely.
All right.
So you mentioned something about using Trello, and that's, I think, something else a lot of newer authors. Oh my gosh, I got to get this software and use this, and I got to plot out 500 story points. And no, you don't have to do what, like you said, do what feels comfortable. You know, some of the first things I wrote that I actually plotted, it was just like four or five story beat sentences. Such and such happens. They decide to go here. They do this. Now the big battle. And that was it. That was my whole plot. But at least I had a goal and knew where it was going a little better than, oh, I'm just going to start writing. And it evolved from there. It's like, oh, wait, now I need to know, are they going to go here first or get this? Does this character come in? And my plots have evolved, outlines have evolved over time. Still, I know they're nowhere near what Patterson does, which is fine with me. It's what I need to do to make sure my story is cohesive, which arguably it still may not be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think you kind of, you know, again, to your point, you'll figure out your process, whatever process works for you. There's so many tools and techniques and advice, but I think the main thing is just to figure out what works for you and just keep writing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The books you've got that you're working on, you've got out, how are you marketing them? What are you doing for marketing?
I still use the perma-free strategy where I write almost all series, which seem to do the best, I guess, for most people. So I have the perma-free strategy going for one series. And then I've done like some box sets and stuff like that where, you know, when I have a complete series, I'll bundle it together, offer it for a special price. But as far as actual, so that's kind of like the, built-in marketing, I guess, right? For like Amazon and other sites is like the free thing. Then obviously people will pick up the free book. And if they get addicted, then they'll ideally read through to the rest. Or a box set, they'll say, wow, this is a stellar deal at 99 cents and for 1500 or 2000 pages. And they'll pick it up. And then, you know, with that, you make more of the money with the Kindle Unlimited page reads. So I do that. But as far as actual marketing, I've got a newsletter I've been building up. So I have like the link in the back of the books for people to sign up for the newsletter. So I'll market to that. I run a budget of AMS ads, the Amazon ads on right on the site there. So I do that every month. I run a Facebook ad that I have running for some box sets right now. So I'm doing that. And then periodically, I guess more so for the perma-free, but like I'll do some of the paid sites. Like Free Booksy or Book Barbarian, Robin Reads, and I was lucky enough to have somebody smile on me and get a BookBub featured deal maybe over the summer for my a first book in a series. Which
nice,
that's kind of like the golden thing there. If you can get that, then it's a great month. So I had actually taken a sci-fi series that I had called Sandstorm, and it had been exclusive to Amazon for, you know, since I wrote it. So I took it wide to everybody for the first time, and I set the first book to free. And then I lined up some paid ads and I got a BookBub. So I was able to give away, X thousand, cause of the site is so powerful, thousands of copies. And then I saw a good amount of read through on the other books, which was really cool. So
great. Yeah. A lot of people say BookBub isn't as good as it used to be, but it sounds like it still did a lot of good and helped you out recently.
Yeah, I think it's probably dulled a little bit over the years, but I mean, it's still powerful. And I think, they curate things heavily, obviously, over there, so it's hard to get a spot. But I think they tend to favor books that are wide, on all retailers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like this series, I haven't had a BookBub in years, and I've not for lack of trying. And I put this series out wide for the first time, and I put that in the note, and then I got accepted, and I was like, woohoo! and it kind of gave me the traction on the other sites because this series had never been on Apple or Barnes & Noble or anything. So it was a good jumpstart to kind of bring that series out to other places.
Nice. Well, there's some good thing to know that helps take things wide if you can get it. So there you go. If you want a BookBub, go wide. And if you get it, hopefully it'll help jump it on all the platforms.
Yeah.
So, well, Tyler, before we go, do you have any like really good last minute advice for new authors?
I mean, it's simple, but I'd say just keep writing. Like we said, if there's nothing on the page, there's nothing to work with, right? So, and know that you're gonna take some lumps along the way. I mean, like I said, in the early days, I remember getting some reviews that were just like, ouch, you know, but you just kind of persevere. And I think generally if the good reviews outweigh the bad, then you just take that as like the positive and just keep going and realize that you're not going to write a perfect first book. Right. I mean, right. So it's, and of course, I don't think I've written a perfect book to this day. And most people probably, you know, you're always improving, hopefully. So, and the only way to improve is to do the thing and just write.
There you go. All right. Great. Well, I appreciate it. It's been great talking to you, catching up again. We'll have to invade one of Jay and Zach's things with some hair metal glam music again sometime.
Yeah, that sounds good. Actually, maybe I'll put you on the spot. What's your favorite hair metal band?
Oh, okay. So this is an issue. A lot of people, a lot of the bands I like classify as hair metal, but I don't. Like, okay. I've heard people say Rush is hair metal, and Rush is not hair metal. Prog, maybe.
Prog, yeah.
But
prog,
not yeah. Hair. And I've also, I've gone back and forth and argued, but a lot of people say Def Leppard. But Def Leppard was a little before the hair metal stuff. And they've lasted longer. So you can't really say their style is hair metal. Back in the day, they were heavy metal, which is hilarious. Yeah. Now they're not really heavy metal. So I don't consider things like that. So in the hair metal realm, I'm pretty much a long, lots of them. One of the bands I really like was, I forget their name now. It was the band that they used for the Marky Mark movie Rockstar. I'll remember it after we hang up, I'm sure.
Okay. Yeah. I'm racking my brain too.
Yeah. I'll send you a message. I liked them a lot. Cinderella, when I went and saw them live, I went and saw Dawkins at a local thing here. It was like four hair metal bands, and Slaughter was amazing. They were so good and so fun. But then Cinderella came up and I'd never really liked them. And I'm like, these guys are phenomenal. I love them.
Yeah,
and then Dawkins came up. You know, they were the headliners. They were the big group from the 80s that playing in the night. They were boring as hell out there on stage. I mean, it was like the least soulful, powerful rendition of any of their songs. And they just stood on stage just playing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So for me, Cinderella took that night. I've always liked Poison. They came out, you know, right at a perfect time for me and loved their stuff. And Brett Michaels, I think, is much smarter in the business than people give him credit for.
Yeah, he's really good.
So those are some of my, I'll have to find that one. It's really driving me crazy.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know. Yeah.
What about you? What are your favorites?
I mean, I guess I'd have to go with Motley Crue or Rat, I think were always my two tops.
Motley.
Yeah.
I went and saw Motley Crue and they were coming out with their last farewell tour. Oh my God, it was horrible. Whoever was doing the sound mixing, I couldn't... Well, my friend leans over and goes, what song are they on? I can't hear any singing, no lyrics. So
yeah, Vince, I'm hoping we've got tickets for the, it's already been postponed once, but it's Poison, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, and Joan Jett.
Yes.
You do too?
I so want to go.
Yeah, next summer at Hershey Park, I'm supposed to go and bring my son. It'd be his first concert. He's 11 and he loves hair metal the same way we do. And he knows that and horror movies. He's like a mini encyclopedia. He can rattle all that off. The years, the player, everything. He knows all. So it'd be cool to share that with him, you know?
So I just looked it up. It's Steel Dragon was the name of the group from the movie Rockstar. I really like them. And it's funny you mentioned horror movies because me and a friend are doing a horror movie podcast and we just got done with season one.
Cool.
But it's not your typical horror movie reviews. It's movies you've probably never even heard of. So
nice. I'll check that out.
I'll shoot you a
link. That's right in my alley.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I warn you, some of the movies are not for kids. So just a warning.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So, cool.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled. And maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.